Hey, you're listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. This is episode 6, and today we're talking about the inherited church. What does it mean to step into a ministry that's been established, that has traditions, and especially from a Canadian Asian context? Let's do this. All right, we got an exciting episode for you guys today. Today we got Shu and our special guest Kevin Ueda joining us today talking about this very important topic because it is a topic that affects most, if not all, Canadian Asian churches. So many of the Asian ministries today in Canada were originally founded as immigrant churches, primarily speaking the native language of their country of origin. Many of the original leaders were from the 1.0 generation and have brought their own cultural understanding of ministry into their churches. Traditionally, English-speaking ministries were a secondary priority, both in focus and in resources, and in some cases, they still are. But more and more, there has been a new generation of leaders, you know, coming from the 1.5, 2.0, and in some rare cases, the 3.0 generations that have been given the reins of leadership for these churches and ministries and been given the opportunity to lead to a new landscape of what those ministries can look like. These new leaders who are coming from a different perspective and hold different convictions have just inherited an established faith community and congregation and are now responsible to take it forward. Not only are there language differences and cultural differences, but potentially different visions and understanding of what the church should be. So we're just going to jump right into this conversation. Kevin, as someone who has personally experienced some of this firsthand, how would you describe the unique circumstance of an inherited church within the Canadian Asian context?
I think this might not be the answer you'd want to hear, but I think we need to make sure we don't get ahead of ourselves. I think there's always a temptation when we were given a strong sense of vision and calling from God to move fast, right? We get excited, we get passionate, we think now's the time to
zealous.
Make a drastic change. God's going to lead us to the future, an exciting future. But I think I've learned in my experience to really not get ahead of ourselves and to understand that with any sort of shift or shaping of culture, it takes time. And I've been learning that in this recent season of life where I realized there are some dominant elements of culture in my own church context that I hadn't even realized. So in light of all that, I really feel that it's a matter of discerning with each step of the way. It's a biblical answer, really, is to move at God's pace, right? So we get excited, we get a sense of vision, but we don't want to leave those who might not be called to this new way of being the church behind. And I think oftentimes that's the temptation for us.
And that's a lot of wisdom right there, yeah.
I think that's true. And I think what ends up happening actually is you either split a church or people start exodusing for like both young and old for various reasons.
Sure.
And I think even if you do take a posture of leadership that's collaborative and seeing the body of Christ work together hand in hand, not just one above all or something like that, but you're truly doing it together. It isn't a quick fix, like unless I'm not saying the Spirit can bring like revival and everyone's minds changed at once, you know, like that. I believe those things can happen, but it does look a lot slower than we think.
Yeah. Shu, you know, you have grown up in Toronto. You know, what has been your experiences as kind of like you're a 2.0 generation? Would you consider yourself 2.0?
Yeah,
2.0. Stepping into a church which has had an established culture and traditions, and you know, you having the missional convictions and perhaps a different vision for the church, what have your experiences been kind of stepping into that kind of culture and to that circumstance?
Oh man, we just heard from Kevin, who's the good one. Now you're hearing from the bad one. It's like I've always, and of course, people who know me, they know I have a chip on my shoulder a lot of times about this stuff. I've grown up in the church, in the Chinese church, and have experienced, I gotta say, just so much frustration at times of kind of just, this is what church is all about. And I guess even going to a downtown church, and now I'm at a suburban church, but a church that's more in the city. First, when I was growing up, I was at TCBC for like 26 years of my life or something like that. And going there, it was like you're commuting long distances, especially in the beginning when our churches weren't as accessible. You're busing it or you're, you know, driving downtown, which is like, you know, 45 minutes or whatever to get there.
Sure.
And you're doing that. You're trying to find even like, I think when I started going to a fellowship group and started to, you know, just being more involved in the church as a whole, it's just taxing to go that far all the time. But then it makes it that much more kind of worth it. It's like, you're like, okay, I'm either going to sleep in and not be part of this, or I'm really truly invested in coming down.
Yeah.
But that's why you're so much more invested and you're just trying to see, no, I'm a part of this. Okay. I'll do this sharing. I was helping with worship a lot at my home church, and it got to the point where we were doing like five year vision plans. You know, I don't know if you've ever been a part of those things. 5 year vision plans. And after these 5 years, you know, God's going to show us. So we're going to pray a lot. We're going to go on retreats a lot. And we're going to do all this stuff together. And then, okay, I was like, yeah, it's exciting. After the 5 years, it was like, okay, now what? And then it was like, it was almost like
another 5 years.
Yeah, another, you know.
10-year plan.
40-year plan. Okay.
200-year plan.
And actually a lot of people left. Not because of the 5-year plan, but it was very disconcerting.
Sure.
Kind of thing. So I've always wondered at that time, I used to think it must be a worship problem because I was just the worship guy. Right? So I thought, oh, it must be a worship problem. But what I realized is, and kind of, you know, what brought me off on this journey of going into ministry even, was that, you know, I wanted to be a worship pastor who would help people worship better. And my conceptions of worship were like Hillsong and Passion at the time and all these things. Oh, but then, of course, Asian churches don't worship like that. Like, we worship like, I don't know, something else. Okay, but get back to your thing.
Another podcast.
We call it the Sunday Stun.
That's can of worms.
But what it led me to was that, no, if people are not worshiping, like, not just expressively, but just with their whole heart, with their lives, it can't just be on a Sunday. And that's what it kind of drew me to, that I think what I feel we've inherited at times is that, oh, well, the Sunday service and bringing people to Sunday service is what, almost like what mission or discipleship is all about, or at least the main thing. Like, you have Sunday school, you have fellowship groups or small groups, but that was the main thing. And then it's got me thinking now more than ever that my passion for worship, which hasn't dwindled, has now become a passion for seeing all of life as worship, which I would just call discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
You're discipling people towards that endeavor to see God, to see Christ reigning over all things.
Yeah,
like in terms of the inherited church, that was the inheriting structure, the thing that I've inherited structurally from Chinese church, that it was just like, that was the big thing. Because if I were just to be even, you know, taking more pot shots, it's like, that's where you pay offering, you know, that's where you're getting, you know, all these things happen so that the rest of the institutional church functions.
Sure.
But then I'm also like, okay, yeah, I get that those things need to happen to a certain degree if that's the model of church you choose, but does that transform?
And change lives.
And I think we were talking about it in another episode with Kevin, but it's just like, have I been modeled what a missional life looks like? Have I been, you know, am I being transformed more and more to see what that looks like in my life?
Sure.
You know, with Christ. But the main thing I was only seeing at the time was the Sunday service. So
right.
If it was not great, I didn't feel great. Or other people didn't feel great. And if it was great, yay. You know, but that, and then you just go about your own business for the rest of the week.
Sure. And that informs our understanding of what it means to be a Christ follower too, right? Because that is kind of our main exposure.
Our main expression.
Or main expression. I like how you kind of word that, Kevin. Like, main expression of what it means to be a Christ follower. And when we see, like, things that are not really life-giving and transformative, there's an easy tendency just to reject that or just to walk away from that, right? Yeah. Okay, one of the things that you guys both kind of talked about, and I'm going to kind of bridge these things together, is, Kevin, you talked about not leaving the previous generation behind, and Shu, you mentioned about discipleship and what does that look like.
I got a big question, because you're mentioning discipleship. I've thought about this for a long time, and, you know, thinking through, and we're pretty young pastors in general.
Youngish,
like in a Caucasian church, we're not. But yeah, like in an Asian church,
we're about to retire in a Caucasian church.
On my 10th church, no. How would you think about discipleship to older people?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I want to ask you both.
All right, so I'll let John take this one first.
You know what? I think discipleship to older generations is a very interesting journey to navigate. It can be difficult because there have been established perspectives and traditions and worldviews already, and yet, you know, none of us are fully there yet. So for sure, all of us have room to continue to grow and continue to be more like Christ in a lot of different ways. And I think perhaps one place to start and perhaps one place to enter into that conversation is to see how we are all becoming more like Christ together, and that we are brothers and sisters that are, you know, that are on the same page, that are, you know, that we, none of us can hold authority and, you know, a position over another person, because we have all been saved by grace and we are all living by the same grace constantly and daily. And perhaps there is a place for all of us to learn from each other, to adopt a attitude of humility and be willing to engage in the conversation together. I think one of the ways that does not work is tell an older generation, you suck, and and no, I'm just being honest here. Like, you suck, and the way you're doing it is wrong, and the way you approach church is wrong.
You guys,
and the
screwed
way
us up.
You screwed us up. We're in therapy because of you. I don't think that's ever helpful. No. I think you know, one of the things that you talked about earlier, Kevin, which is about like listening and about hearing where they're coming from, and like there's so much wisdom from older generations that we can learn from as well. And yet I think starting the conversation with any older generation has to be getting to a place of seeing each other as growing together, seeing each other as part of the church, even to be serving on mission together, right? On the mission of God together, and to be working towards those ends. And, you know, I think one of the things that I've personally seen that has been helpful is to be able to lead and invest into younger generations together. Because I think in that process, a lot of our traditions and a lot of the ways that we may have taken for granted or as givens comes out. And I think those are opportunities then to be working through those things and discerning together. Yeah, I think we just talked about it in a previous episode about, like, you know, that we are all allies together, right? And I think Bernard brought up that term, and all I can think about is Star Wars and the Rebel Alliance. And you know, if we believe that we are all allies, we are not each other's enemies, we are learning and growing together, that we can edify each other's growth together, then that is a great place to start. I think too, because like previous generations have always approached discipleship as knowledge, like kind of the assimilation of knowledge and going to Sunday school and just learning more. But I think just, like, once again, like inviting others to be on the mission of God together, putting things, certain things into practice, informs us in such a way that is more transformative and life-changing that can be done together with an older generation. So those are kind of my initial thoughts. I don't know, Kevin, what are some of your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I agree with what you said. I'll just kind of point this out. I think the best way to start, or one way not to start, as you mentioned, is to come in with this, you know, this attitude of, okay, you messed things up for us, and now we're gonna do the real work here.
Like,
we're gonna do it the right way,
right?
But I think it needs to start with a discussion of actually affirming what God has done in previous generations, the faithfulness of these men and women who, you know, still remain strong and devout in their faith all these years. I think it's such a powerful testimony, you know, especially in a day and age when we can make decisions in a split second. We have so many options and choices. It's very easy to just, you know, change and make decisions, change things in our lives so easily, right? It's like putting on a new hat or something, or you know, changing right. clothes every couple of hours. Like, it's so easy to make those decisions and to make those choices. But I think to be able to commit and to persevere in your faith and your walk with Christ, and to affirm that and say that, you know, this is something that the previous generations have done well. They have persevered.
Sure.
We affirm them in that strength. I think that's a great start to the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be all on the same page, being like,
right,
you know, what are the desires that we all share, right? We want to see Christ glorified. We want to see the nations come back to him. Maybe let's start there instead of, you know, being like, this is wrong, you know, I'm right. you know, and it could be like from both sides too, right? An older generation can have that posture of like, you younger generations and young bucks don't know what you're talking about, right? And like, sure, like we can learn from that too, right?
See, and you know, I'm agreeing with all you guys. I'm just as well, you guys know I'm always the contrarian on those things, but like, I wrestle with this a lot. Like one of my leaders at the church where I was asking him, he's like 50, late 50 or maybe 60. And he's like in a small group with a person who's like 70. And he's like, Shu, you really expect me to disciple this guy who's that much older than me and he has all this life experience? I'm like, if you're a leader, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, but I've had that experience where that's happened. And so I find sometimes, and I'm on the same page. We have to be on the same page with our understanding of the gospel, of the, you know, the mission. What does that look like for us? And be in agreement on those things. And I find the hardest part is getting there, yeah. The realities of the life stagism that we've created in our churches, that is, I don't really want to spend time with that person who's older than me. I don't really want to spend time with that person who's younger than me, unless I'm a youth leader or right, a counselor. Right. Or is this attitude that I'm like, how come we aren't, you know, living this out more, you know, like at least I think how Christ, how the Apostle Paul has showed us.
Sure.
Living, being a household of faith of something to that degree. And I think that has partly to do with some of the Western influence that we have that's segregated some of those things.
Yeah.
And I think actually one of the good things is an Asian culture that has brought more of the collectivism, the familial kind of thing. But that's just what I've wrestled with. And I think in terms of discipleship in a Asian immigrant church, Canadian church, moving towards being Canadian, that's something I've wrestled with, because if you don't get some of those older guys on board, you know, and if they're not going to disciple the younger guys with you, like you're saying, sure. John, it's pretty hard.
Yeah. Let's think about what does it mean to move forward. What do you see is the process of taking an inherited church and moving it forward? Like Kevin, you were talking about not jumping ahead of the gun and just being so passionate and zealous and caught up in this vision and leaving people behind. How do you guys see taking an inherited ministry forward, especially when there have been differing philosophies and traditions?
I think the first step is to, and I mentioned this before in a previous question, but it's to come in and simply like observe. I think oftentimes we're so quick to have an answer to everything. We see a problem, here's the solution. We see where the church is going, here's where we're going to fix it. But to understand, okay, so what are some things that are being identified? What are some possible roadblocks or barriers for us to move a church in a certain direction, or to shift the culture towards a certain direction as well? Mm. It's interesting. So Shu, just going back to your response, I think it's interesting. My thought is there are some fundamental cultural values amongst Asian churches that I think makes it difficult for us to move forward. One of them is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in my context, I've learned that there's a difference between concrete view of faith and an abstract view of faith.
Okay.
So I think oftentimes when we think about faith from a North American perspective, we see it in a very abstract way. Now, you could, you know, disagree with me, but I think that. And it's interesting when you have the same conversation or ask the same question to a Japanese person, and you ask them questions like, okay, well, where is God? And they'll often look to the trees or the mountains or a body of water, and they'll say, God is in this mountain, God is in this tree, sure. God is in this lake. And their eyes are often kind of like down, right?
Right.
When you ask maybe someone from North America, where is God? You see the eyes kind of go up, and it's sort of this abstract view of God is in the heavens or
okay.
And different ways that we can you know, think about where God is. And I think this also translates into how we view our faith.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at even Japanese cultural values, very hardworking, they prefer the concrete. I think there's pragmatism there as well.
Sure.
So they see, and I think that's why the Sunday service is key, because it is more concrete. We see that this is a very clearly defined, it's a very you know, structured, planned out form of expressing our walk with Christ. It's when we get together on a Sunday at a given time, a given place, and we take part in very concrete activities. We experience it. It's a very
sure.
real way. And when you think about discipleship with a holistic perspective, that's often, I think, more abstract.
Yeah.
I think as a balance, you need the balance of the concrete and abstract, but it's sort of abstract in a way that, well, how do you define walking with someone? Or to make disciples, what does it mean to walk with someone through everyday life? It's not necessarily structured in terms of plans and, you know, okay, we're going to do this together this day and this week or you know, this time during the week. That's going to be part of a discipleship. But I think those lines are a bit more blurred. I think that's what makes it more abstract. So
sure.
I think from cultural perspective, I think that's why there's a strong focus on the Sunday services or the Sunday gatherings, because it tends to be more concrete. So it tends to be more of a natural way for them to live out a natural expression of their faith. So to move forward,
yeah,
I think it's identify that. And then we need to ask ourselves questions. So why do we adhere to a more concrete form of faith or expression of faith? Maybe it's easier for us. It's easier for us to see in tangible ways. It's easier to plan what's tangible.
Yeah, right?
The intangible things are a bit more difficult. And we see it. So when we consider that, I think also one of the difficulties or challenges is our measures of success are also defined by what we see more easily.
Right.
So that's why we think about, okay, well, how many people attended our Sunday service? Oh, we had 30 new people this past Sunday. Oh, we're doing something good. We're doing well.
Right. The measurability.
Measurability,
the
exactly.
Metrics, yeah.
Yeah, the metrics for success ministry. So I think, as I mentioned, identifying it and identifying the reasons why we adhere to those values, and then ask ourselves more critical, more important question, how does gospel inform that? Right? What does gospel say about how we view success in ministry? Should it be based on concrete, measurable goals, or should it be something else?
Sure.
Those are more difficult questions, but I think the first step is identifying those cultural values that may potentially be barriers for us to shift the culture in a different direction.
Okay, that's interesting because, yeah, I'll push back because, and I like that though, that concrete and abstract thing, because it's so fascinating. I don't think I've ever heard it put it that way, because I do definitely see that. But what's interesting is, well, one, I think of pantheism, right? When you talk about, you're looking at the, like, and then
animistic,
I also,
kind of theology,
materialist kind of thing. But it's interesting because it sounds like, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, like in an Asian culture, we want control. Ooh. We want things we want to see, and so that in my context where at a larger church, honestly, I have to write down proposals and get people on the same page, and we want concrete stuff all the time. And I think we're uncomfortable with the abstract. And I will tell you, sure, the Bible is probably, I think, the most concrete thing we have, which is also why, rigorous defenders of scripture or like, but then at the same time, a lot of now like literary criticism and postmodern philosophy like skews all that stuff now. Like how do we engage all that stuff? But why it's more abstract is that, do we say God is concrete or God is abstract? And then is the mission, the contextual mission, super concrete? Or, I just think about stuff like that when you're talking. So it's really fascinating to see that. But in terms of a forward motion with some of that, I think what is hard to bring people towards this next step towards mission, especially in an inherited church context, people are in Asian context, immigrant or even first and second, third generation, maybe are uncomfortable with maybe not being in control. One thing that I've learned in some of my studies, I think it was Alan Roxburgh, he was saying, we're so busy trying to control and reshape church as a structure. We're always trying to do that when we need a first. We'll always need to deal with structure and deal with those things. Like what you're saying, Kevin, listening, observing, but do we listen and observe to what God wants for us first? Mm-hmm. I was just making fun of my church's 5-year praying plan, my home church. I think it was a good move, but you still need to do something.
Sure.
You can't just pray. And I think that's at times we can get lost with our heads in the clouds and think God is going to drop something, up there. We just be faithful in prayer for 5 years, right? But sure, we do need to discern what God is doing.
Sure.
And then after we discern what God's doing, we need to discern amongst ourselves as well. Hey, where is God leading us? And then
what's
our next steps? Kind of thing. So it's like, are we discerning what God is doing, where he's doing that? Who are we supposed to engage? And are we actually taking steps to go, okay, now let's join God in what he's doing?
Sure.
And we have to also experiment. We also have to, it's not going to be always, perfect plan, but we experiment. And I think, at least for me, I think we're uncomfortable with that.
Sure.
And at times I'm uncomfortable with that, if I were to be honest. But
that's relinquishing a lot of that control that you're talking about and being willing to be led to places where maybe uncomfortable or not like natural or organic sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. And it's interesting you bring that up, and both of you guys kind of bring that up. You were talking about kind of prayer and then discerning and then putting into action. Right. And then Kevin, you were talking about abstract and concrete, right? And it sounds like both of you guys are also talking about similar things, about bridging those things together. Of course, we would say that any extreme of those would fall short of the way that God has revealed himself to be, right? God is not, he's not abstract, unknowable, just imagination, right? Because God is at work in our life, and God, you know, has shown himself through his son Jesus being the incarnate one, right? Coming to us. That was a very tangible thing, right? And yet God is not just tangible and just limited to the tangibility of things and the concreteness of things. And so it's interesting that, like, to kind of understand God from both standpoints and coming together but not leaning way towards one or the other. Maybe it's culturally influenced, like you guys are both saying, that, you know, maybe from Japanese it's coming from one side, and from Chinese it's coming more from one side. And it's interesting to hear the little bit of differences that the two cultures are approaching this matter in, right?
And that's why we need to be more Pentecostal, because the Spirit's what's gonna
That's right. Well, that's a completely different conversation, and that's really interesting. This is the question I wanted to ask from before. Like, what have some of the conversations been with those who have been part of the church, or maybe who have established the church, or those who have led the church in which we are now stepping into, in terms of forward momentum and kind of having a deeper imagination of the church and moving forward as a church? What have some of those conversations been like? And we want to be honest here, and at the same time, I want to just qualify that these are just our experiences and our feelings. It may not necessarily always be the objective truth, but I think it's always helpful to engage what is our experiences and our feelings as perhaps a signpost into some certain things we need to address, right?
Here, I'll throw you my thought immediately.
Okay. That I think you're ready for this.
And because I think we fall in the trap too, right? Like, you know, I've name-dropped people and talked about books or stuff that I've learned. I think the past generation too is we're in this kind of weird colonial kind of culture where we're reading books from Caucasian, white, you know,
Western
church authors telling us how things should be done. And sure, we can say we learn from glean from other people and stuff. We learn from everybody. Great, you can say all that. But what I've seen most of the time happen, even in Asian immigrant church, is like we just take people's books and try to implement them. And I'm guilty of that too. Even like I feel like, oh, these guys did this. Like I'm learning from people too. But it's almost like I think what was bad is that we try to take directly the experiences of other people and say, this is now my experience.
Right.
All the hard work of discernment, of contextual discipleship, of thinking through the gospel and what that means, it goes out the window. Oh, yeah, here's a prepackaged whatever thing. And I think...
And you've trusted someone else to have told you what that looks like, and then you've just accepted it, right?
But I've seen the other side where there's churches that are just comfortable not learning anything.
Sure. Maintain the status quo.
Not even like purposefully. It's just kind of like, yeah, let's just... It is what it is. It's almost like this. There's your abstract, like flaky, more like God's working.
That sounds more like apathy, right?
Sort of, yeah. there's stuff like that. So I see the extremes of that in terms of like some of the past generation that I've engaged, where you have some people who are like, you know, that let's take this cool church from the States and let's be like that, or let's learn all this thing from this you know the mega church. It was the church growth movement. Right? That was our past of things. And so you've had church growth / immigrant church, and that's the weird kind of fusion that happened, at least from my experience.
Yeah. And it's interesting that a lot of the culture around those big conferences, right, have kind of pushed that perspective. And, you know, people will go down to the conferences. And I would definitely say that, you know, Canadian Asians are just as susceptible to some of these perspectives and models and approaches and just adopting complete the complete perspective of someone else without, like Shu, you were saying, doing the hard work of that cultural contextualization and what does the gospel and discipleship look like for us, right? Like, it's so easy, and like I think I've heard more of that come out of Canadian Asian churches, that it's more just adopting a model, and then this is what we need to do. But, you know, maybe it may not be the most helpful way of approach, right? Kevin?
Yeah, no, I don't want to be overly critical of the Asian Canadian church, but my thought is I think this could be related to what I talked about, adhering to more of the concrete sort of thoughts and practices, because to bring in a package that someone else has already, you know, prepared and written, someone who has a name, who's established themselves, the degrees, whatever, it seems to be more concrete, right? So it's a safer, you know, more tangible way of like, okay, if we, it's equating that to success. It's easier to do that,
sure,
right?
Sure.
From a concrete perspective.
Yeah.
But to do the hard work of discerning, to do the hard work of praying and really leaning on God, allowing Him to move the congregation forward, in that sense, I think, to be more abstract, I think that's a scarier practice to adopt in an Asian church context.
Yeah. I'm going to push this just a little bit more. I'm going to bring it back to kind of where the previous question was going. What have some of the conversations you guys have had with pastors and leaders? And, like, this is where we want to be helpful. Where have you seen it fruitful to kind of build bridges and to be able to move forward together? So once again, we want to be honest, but we also want to be moving forward in a holistic way, and also in a way that we can be faithful and leading by the convictions that God gives us. But yeah, what are some of the conversations you guys have had with pastors from the churches that you have inherited, and where have you guys seen those opportunities to build bridges?
This is still a work in progress, but I think where I've seen a bit of fruit in this initiative or in this way of moving the church forward is to adopt a communal form of discipleship. So a couple of years back, and this actually was born out of the conversations we had with our missional conversation group, so yeah. I'm so thankful for this. But the idea of, okay, we've been talking as a church, talking a lot about discipleship, intentional disciple making, but then I started realizing that we've been talking and theorizing and strategizing, but the practice was sort of lost, right? So we didn't really understand what it looked like, concrete aspect of disciple making and being sure. made into disciples. So I challenged the elders at the time to commit to a season of discipleship as a community. And I think it was something new. It was something new for me. I don't know if I didn't know if it'd work or if they'd think I'm crazy. But the English speaking elders at the time, they said, yeah, you're going to give this a shot. We're going to try this. And so for a series of, it was almost half a year, I believe, each one of the English speaking elders committed to, being part of a communal form of discipleship. And I think that really helped spur or bring the movement to the church and where we felt that God was leading us. Because it's not just talking about discipleship in theory, but it's living it out and experiencing the attention of intention of disciple making and sure. being made into disciples. So I think that helped quite a bit. So I'm praying and thinking about maybe bringing that back in to our current board of elders and see if they'd want to be part of that. Yeah. It takes a lot of humility.
Sure.
I really admire the elders for taking that step. It's a step of faith, right? Yeah. I'm younger than almost all of them. And here I am, a young buck, saying, hey, do you guys want to be, discipled?
Sure.
And they were very humble enough and say, yeah, we're going to give this a shot.
Did you experience any pushback?
Yeah. I mean, there were some challenges and some obstacles because it was something new. It was something different, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want this to be something they saw as another addition to what they were already doing. So it's like, oh, now I have to do discipleship with Kevin. Mm. So I try to make it as more, to use another person's example or words, to make it more of a natural rhythm in life.
Sure.
So, that was a bit of a stretch for them as well as it was for me.
Cool.
But it was good, and we learned a lot through that experience. So even now when I talk about, okay, what does it mean to disciple someone, they at least have some basis or some experience that they can look back to and say, I saw how that took place and how that was actually practically lived out.
Sure.
So that could be one way that we can start this movement
right in the church. Yeah. Shu, what have your experiences been with chatting with pastors and about building bridges?
Well, one thing first about Kevin's thing, I was just like, I challenge you, get someone else to lead that. As Ooh. The people you've discipled, and now you can let them lead and you help. You know, the 3DM stuff, right?
Wow, okay.
And then,
that's a good point.
Yeah, and because that's awesome to hear that's happened in your context, yeah. in your ministry. One thing I've learned, I think, the hard way, and I think God has been taming the wild horse in me, is whenever anything has come up in my mind, even though I've brought it up, and I knew that was the direction, whatever, the ministry should go, and if there were pushback from both, people or senior leadership, and it's happened numerous times, feel really terrible or feel really, oh my gosh, another thing. And I think what actually ended up happening is almost everything that I've suggested has happened 2-3 years later. And it's been a humbling process for me where I'm like, I can't push things like it's in God's timing. Yeah. So.
Which kind of brings it back to what Kevin was saying at the start. Yeah.
So we're working with more senior leadership. It's been like developing relationships, as we've been talking about. It's been taking a few at a time to try to, spend that discipleship time or dialogue time, midrash, whatever you want to go at, call it.
Yeah.
It's just taking time. And especially trying to move a large church, a large ministry. At times people are like, that's like trying to move a cruise ship, you know, like, but yeah, I think it's taken, like, from my experience with doing it together with people ahead of me, it's just been in those kind of liminal spaces to talk to them, to ask questions, at least when it's possible. And and just develop that. And I think one thing that I've learned, if anything, things don't happen because I make it happen, you know, or something like that. And God's
humbling.
Working. Yeah,
that's
God's
humbling.
Working. And I don't mean just my church. Like, I used to be more heavily critical about other churches or whatever. So, they're stuck in the Stone Ages or whatever. But God's been working. I think God's been, definitely bringing a better mentality of mission, of discipling people. And sure, those things have become buzzwords. Like, even I think another pastor was like, okay, we don't use the M and the D word anymore, you know, like,
really?
No, it's just like,
cut it out of the vernacular.
You know, like, I think we're in a culture that's so much like, sure, you could bring these cool words up to the forefront and even explain them, right? But then all of a sudden, yeah, we've talked about this for 3 years.
We're done with it. Let's move on to the next thing.
It's like the next new cool ministry or book or whatever. I'm like, no, like, let's stay faithful to what Christ calls us to. And okay, that aside, like, yeah, I'm just, that's just kind of how I've been processing with people. And you know, I've been seeking mentorship from people who are older than me as well. Like, I think one thing I learned really quickly was that if I'm not being discipled, how can I expect other people to just say that, hey, you should be in a discipling relationship in a communal discipleship thing? If I'm not getting that, the joke in our group, our initial conversation group, is that we sometimes when we're talking about undiscipleship than discipleship, right?
But unlearning,
you know, but I've needed to lean on some people. And in this season of my life, I found a mentor, like a professor at one of the seminaries, and he's going to walk me through some of the next while for me. So it's just like, it's even being humble enough to go, hey, I need this as well.
Right.
And will God, you know, provide the right person the right time? You know, that's been important.
Yeah.
So
to cap off our episode, we're going to leave you guys with your takeout box, your takeaway box. And this is the one thought that we want you guys to chew on and to take home with you and to really wrestle through and to think about, as especially in regards to the inherited church and inherited ministries. And so we're going to start with Kevin. What's your final thought? What is something that you want listeners to not forget, especially as they approach this specific issue of inherited ministries?
If it's okay, I'm going to actually steal a shoe's thought, because I've really been reflecting on it. I think it's been really good. But the idea of really discerning what God is already doing, I think, is an important thing to consider. I know my struggle is when I get excited, I like to move with what I feel God's led me to do and start getting passionate. But the practice of discerning and waiting on God, I believe, is important. I think it was Alan Hirsch who said that theology needs to precede ecclesiology. So it's not the doing that we start with first, but it's the idea of identifying who God is, how he reveals himself to us through scriptures, and understanding, discerning, how is he already at work in the world that he's called us to? And the follow-up question is, how do we follow him in that?
All right, Shu, what's your takeout box?
So for me, if I were just to think of any takeout box, it's just try to be encouraging for once.
You can do it.
I can do it. Don't give up too fast. Don't leave your context too fast. The first sign of things not going well, or even theologically I disagree, or structurally I don't like what the church has done or whatnot, God is working in you particularly to be a part of the change, or be a part of where he is moving people towards. That's the body of Christ together, that local body of Christ. One of the things is that there are people right in front of you, I believe, that God wants you to invest into, to also model with your life and also send them out too. You're discipling people.
Sure.
You are called to make disciples. And yes, it sucks when family is dysfunctional sometimes, a lot of times, but we still see God working and we still encourage one another. And we also want to, I hope, see fruit.
Yeah. Lots of things to really wrestle with and to see how does that you know, look within your current context. Thank you guys so much for listening. Join us next time for episode 7, where we talk about kingdom partnerships. How do we work alongside other churches, other organizations, and how do we be all part of the mission of God together? Before you go, please remember to subscribe on iTunes and Podbean, and don't forget to rate and review our episodes. We'd love to hear from you, so please hit us up on Facebook or Twitter or email. Leave us your comments and feedback. Let us know how you are engaging with this episode's content, how you are dealing with the inherited church, and how you are striving to be missional in your lives. You've been listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast, and we hope you will join us on this journey. See you next time.